Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This is Internet Marketing. Brought to you by Site Visibility at sitevisibility.com. This is Internet Marketing, and today I'm talking with Joost de Valk, owner and creator at Joost.com. Hello, Joost.
Hey there.
I have got your name right, haven't I?
You do, yeah. It took some practice, didn't it?
Because English people want to say juiced, don't they? Because it's spelled J-O-O-S-T.
Yes, and that only happens after excessive drinking.
I don't even need to drink for that to happen for me. Joost.com, tell us just a little bit about what you do over there.
So we do a few things, but all of it's related to website optimization in one way or another. So most people that know us probably know us for our WordPress plugins, particularly our WordPress SEO plugin or our Google Analytics plugin. So we do a lot around WordPress website reviews for all sorts of websites, actually, and I do a lot of consulting for higher end brands.
Yeah, aren't you the guy people call in if they've been sort of clobbered by Panda and things like that?
We are in and with our website reviews. We do get a lot of people that have been hit at some way, and we don't really mind. We usually like a good challenge. I have to admit that we do a lot more Panda than Penguin.
Yeah.
So we're good at helping people fix their site. We're not necessarily the best at helping people fix their backlinks.
I'm with you. Well, I wanted to talk about internationalization. Try and say that three times in a row very fast today.
Internationalization. I can do that.
Well, you're obviously a better man than me then. Often goes hand in hand with localization. But I know that you recently worked on a project, didn't you, that highlighted some interesting aspects around internationalization. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I recently did a migration of The Guardian, which, of course, many of your listeners will know as a UK newspaper originating in Manchester, moving to London a couple decades later. And up until like a year or three ago, it was mainly that. It was a British newspaper that covered British news and just happened to have a website that more people around the world would visit. And then they started an office and an editorial office in both New York and somewhat later on in Australia. Mm. So you get to the point where you stop being a newspaper and you start being an international news outlet where you just happen to have a paper as well.
Yeah.
They decided at some point that they were going digital first, as in that they would publish everything digitally first. And that digital was their main focus for the future and not print.
Mm.
But that also means that their audience suddenly grew from, like, what is it, 60 million Brits to a couple of hundred million, if not more, people around the world who read their news in English. And funnily enough, the Brits have some things that don't really translate well across the ocean.
Yes.
So, there's some work. There was some work to do here and there, starting with moving from Guardian.co.uk to TheGuardian.com.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, because domain name migration can be really difficult, can't it? It sounds like it went reasonably well in your case. Why do you think that was?
It went reasonably well because I'm a magician.
Yeah.
To be fair, these usually go wrong. and wrong in the way that you lose like 50% of your traffic for 6 months until Google catches up to what you're doing, even when you do all the technical stuff right.
Yeah.
And getting the technical stuff right is hard enough as it is. This one, I think, went particularly well because we weren't really migrating one domain, but four into one.
Right.
So we were going from mobile domains. We had a US mobile domain and a UK mobile domain and a Guardian Co.UK and a very small but existing website in the US. And we migrated them all into one.com. And so we were not only migrating, we were also consolidating.
Do you think that's easier than going the other way there, where you start off with one domain and you're sort of trying to sort of expand it out to N new domains?
Well, that was the first question the Guardian asked of me. Like, could you help us start a new domain for the US market? And then later on, the Australian office was opened and they were like, yeah, so we need one in Australia as well. And I was going, you're nuts. We shouldn't do this.
Mm.
And luckily at that point, more people within the Guardian started agreeing with me that that wasn't really a good idea. So we went to one.com domain for the entire company. I think that's easier, yeah.
Yeah.
To be honest, there's very, very few cases where a multi-domain strategy will really work well, especially if it's all the same language.
Sure.
So you've got a company, and we've got several clients that are like that too, where you have a French website, a German website, and an English website aimed at France, Germany, and the UK. Then it makes sense to have three different websites with three different top-level domains, etc.
I see, yeah.
But if it's all English, it doesn't really matter.
Mm.
You're just making things harder for yourself.
There's a question I want to ask, because I know a lot of people get confused between internationalization and localization, and we'll drill down into internationalization in a minute, but what's the difference between internationalization and localization?
Good question. What do you think the difference is, Emily?
Well, I think I know the answer, but I was going to check with you. I as far as I understand it, internationalization is like a sort of one-off process where you take your website or your app and you make it possible for it to sort of present itself in different languages, whereas localization is the process of then using that infrastructure that you've put in place and then making it so that, you know, it can be understood by, I don't know, Chinese people, Australian people, even if they speak the same language. There's different nuances, aren't there, in between the two languages. That's as I understand it.
One of the things that's always very interesting is if you write for a global audience,
yeah,
and you want to describe, say, the length of a boat, would you do that in Imperial or a metric?
I guess that would depend on where you were.
Well, yeah. So for most journalists, it depends on how they're used to doing that. They're not thinking about what their readers are used to.
Mm.
So I actually prefer doing both, especially for The Guardian, for instance. But that is the sort of problem that you run into when you start to do internationalization in a way that you only have specific pages once. So we only have one version of an article page.
Mm.
If you read the article in the UK, you read the exact same article as someone in the US. Because at a large publisher, you can't go about and check the article and then republish it for the US, where the only thing you need to change is the metric to Imperial, pounds to dollars, etc. That's just undoable.
And boots to trunk and stuff like that.
Yeah, etc. And that's undoable when you have like 300-400 articles a day.
Yeah, so it sounds like, because I mean, the Guardian being a newspaper, I mean, it sounds like you can do the internationalization bit, but you can't so much do the localization bit. Is that how it is?
Yeah, that is how it is. And it does mean that we do need to think about the localization bit, because we do need to think about, okay, so if people outside of the UK are going to read this, what do they think? Do we write Prime Minister or do we write British Prime Minister?
Yeah.
Because that might not be obvious if you're not from the UK. So there's a lot of stuff there that you should think about. But the funny thing is, if you're a smaller business, you can actually probably do these things a lot better because you don't have as many pages and you can just take the time to do this properly.
Well, that's right, because I remember we had a brief, when we were doing the pre-call, we had a brief conversation, didn't we, about different approaches to sales pages in the UK sort of versus the USA, weren't we? It's more than just language, isn't it? It's to do with culture as well.
It's a lot to do with culture, and it's a lot to do with what people find more important. So for some people, you might have to look at quality of your service a lot more and a bit less at price, and the other way around.
Mm.
So if you're selling to the Dutch, you need to focus on price.
Yeah.
Even though that is probably stupid. But if you, and so it really depends. You you should figure out, like, okay, who's my target market, and how should I target them in their specific country and specific region, even, because the US is, well, we all know that Texas and New York are not exactly the same type of city.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of localization and also sorts of ways of talking to people that you need to think about. Okay, so who is my target market here, and how am I going to approach it?
So there's certainly a lot of things for people to think about there, especially if you've got the sort of flexibility to, you know, to target your pages a bit more, perhaps more so than an international newspaper.
Yeah, and at the same time, it also means that you can go far too far.
Yeah. Which brings me on to the next point, actually, because I was wondering what the best sort of practices were for content owners in terms of internationalization. I mean, are there sort of some guidelines? I mean, how would you know you were going too far, for example?
Well, if you're going too far, if you're spending more time on it than you're getting a return for.
Yeah.
At first, if you're say you're an English or a US company and you want to move into the UK or the US or vice versa, etc. What I would do is I first look at my site and think, like, okay, so what is particularly British or particularly American about what I do?
Mm.
And then ask someone from that other country to look at your website with a good hard look and tell you the same thing. And then see, like, okay, is it really necessary that it's so British, or can I just change it to be more global?
Mm.
In many ways, I would make it easier for myself by globalizing the content first instead of trying to localize it.
Ah.
Because localizing is actually a very expensive and probably an effort that takes a lot of time. And if you're selling, it depends a bit on what you're selling, but if you're selling something that is just as useful in the US as it is in the UK, then I would just go for a website that explains that properly to everyone and make very clear that you ship to both countries. But the latter thing is probably one of the things to be very aware of, especially if you decide to move your or build your website on a .com domain. I found that people in the UK are very quick at figuring out whether this product that's being promoted to them at that website is actually available to them in their country.
Yeah.
We often, as Dutch people, we have this problem a lot, because a lot of Dutch speak proper English and probably read loads of English in American websites, but a lot of the products aren't available to us. Simple things like showing a little flag that you are in your sidebar or somewhere saying we ship to, and then showing the flags of the countries you ship to. Simple stuff like that can make a tremendous difference in your sales from those pages. So I'd globalize first, and then perhaps localize later if you figure out that there's specific stuff you need to address for specific types of people. And you can even say that, like, you can even have on a globalized sales page, you could have, if you're from Texas, read this. Or if you're from the US, we've got some more information on blah, blah here.
Yeah, so it's kind of like a hybrid approach, isn't it?
Yeah, to be honest, I think that's the only approach that doesn't waste your time for all the small businesses. The more I thought about it after we chatted in our pre-chat, the more I think, like, you don't want to do two websites.
Mm.
Because you can't maintain two websites. Most people have enough trouble as it is maintaining one website.
Sure.
And we, in our website reviews, we see so many websites where you go, like, you should just do this, and then you look at what we think is the just do this list, and it's like 4 weeks of work.
Yeah.
And a lot of small businesses probably don't have that time, so it's a matter of making choices.
It's a tricky one, isn't it? Because, you know, if you own a website, I'm thinking that localization is actually quite tricky to do. It's easy, for example, if you're, I don't know, producing content articles for sort of content marketing or something, you can do different versions for different sort of locations, can't you? But with a website, it's trickier because from the websites I've seen and the stuff that I've worked on, because I'm a Ruby on Rails developer, it's not difficult to make it so that, you know, you can click a button on your homepage, like for a French version and a German version and a Spanish version. It just uses different dictionaries behind the scenes to put the, like, the sort of 200 words that you've defined. It just swaps them out. But it's a shame you can't do that for localization. You can have a submenu for sort of America. Then you have like Texas, Hawaii. You'd have about 2,000 different locales, wouldn't you?
No, and you often can't take payment in more than one or two currencies either.
Yeah.
So we chose on Yosacom, we chose to take payment in dollars, even though we obviously, our whole life is in euros.
Yeah, this is this globalization concept again, isn't it? I've seen that all over the web, and so many people just take dollars, don't they?
Yeah, people are just used to dollars, and they can do the dollar. Even if their dollar is not their normal amount, they can do the dollar conversion in their head very easily, and they can't do that with the euro.
Yeah.
So our sales increased when we switched from euros to dollars. So it's very simple. But you have to think about all these things and realize that the world is a very weird place, and that it is one global thing, but at the same time there is a lot of subtle differences that you need to take care of.
Well, Yos, thank you so much for that. You've really given us some food for thought there, some things that we need to think about, certainly in terms of internationalization, and that is with a Z or an S. And localization, likewise. How can people find out about you? Is there a website, Twitter, etc.?
So Yoast.com, Yoast.com. I'm also Yoast, Yoast, on Twitter. We're on Facebook using the same name. So just about anywhere. Or you could just Google us.
Fantastic. And just a quick one. How are the Netherlands doing in the World Cup at the moment?
Well, we're still in.
Fantastic. I just thought I'd let you rub it in.
We're doing quite well. I have high hopes.
Excellent. Okay. Well, thank you very much for listening, everyone. Sitevisibility.com/impodcast is the place to go to find us on the web. You can send emails to podcast@sitevisibility.co.uk. You can phone and leave a message on +44 1273 256 150. And of course, you'll always find us on iTunes. And we love having reviews. So thanks very much again to Yoast.
My pleasure.
And it's goodbye from me, Andy White, and we'll see you next time on Internet Marketing.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.